You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside can only come. gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. The government cares about
they you. Ain't giving up a second thought about you. No. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself. Yeah. Ghetto people. With your life
running like a rare disease,
I'm running like a rare disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good weekend. And hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it has to be done, it must be done, you will get it done. And of course, you will do it safely. You will wear your mask. You will keep your distance. You will handle your business. And that's why we have much love and respect for you. Always, never procrastinating, putting things off. No, you always handle your business. Here listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. And the drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And that's followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Tuesday from 8 to 10. On Thursdays from 7 to 9, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisi Y. Ayan. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know what time it is. That's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So give them a listen tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. On Saturday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 p.m., the Sankofa Elders Council. On Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The products are produced by us. And once again, go online to WeBuyBlack.com and you'll see they're trying to raise some money to establish a supermarket here in the Atlanta, in the metro Atlanta area, which we don't have, which we should have been had, which we should have many. We should be competing with Publix and Kroger's and whoever else in our area. I ain't saying peak with them nationally. They're a national chain. I understand that. But still, anyway, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Taihemba, he'll be taking our people to the continent today. That's right, April 2nd through April 12th, going to Senegal and Gambia. And the next trip is May 24th to June 5th, going to Ghana. And then in November, November 18th through the 29th, he's going to Tanzania. And then at the end of the year, December 24th through January 5th, 2022, he's going back to Ghana on a repatriation and investment tour. That's right. Africa for the Africans. Brothers and sisters, if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Yep. Africa for the Africans. I'll be talking with Brother Bomani when he gets back about the tour to Senegal and Gambia and the upcoming tours and how you can get involved. But once again, brothers and sisters, go to his website. Everything you need to have a trip of a lifetime is right there for you. Baba Renoko Rashidi. Baba Renoko has a trip upcoming, but he also has webinars. And he had one with Professor Baina Bello. He's having another one. And this is here in February. We feature a conversation with distinguished Haitian activist and scholar, Dr. Baina Bello. In April of this year, we continue this tradition with a dynamic Nubian scholar and tour operator, Samir Abbas. This is a two-hour event, and it's going to be really powerful. Our focus will be the great kingdoms of ancient Nubia. As with Professor Bello, it will be a conversation with Dr. Rashidi, which amplify opportunity for dialogue and questions and answers in a, from the audience. And you don't want to miss it. And that's going to be Friday, April 16th. Not this Friday coming up. This Friday coming up. This Friday coming up. Not today. We'll have Baba Mwali Mumbarudi. Baba Barudi will be my guest next week, Friday. And then the Friday after that, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern time, it's on Eventbrite. It's $20, a conversation with Amir Abbas, a dynamic Nubian scholar and tour operator. And also, too, he is going to Kemet. So that's coming up. And there's some other stuff that Baba Renoko. So go to drrenoko.com, drrenoko.com, his website, because he has a trip to Kemet. He has a trip with the some other scholars. So Baba Renoko is doing his thing. I love to see it. Habesha stands for helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. And they're doing outstanding work. The Habesha, they have various projects. It's Habesha Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, and Golden Growers, and, of course, the Urban Green Jobs, all kinds of good stuff. But more importantly, or equally as important, they have the Kashi Project going on in Ghana as we speak, and then developing a world-renowned, developing a sacred space for researching the ancient traditions of sustainable housing, holistic healing, organic agriculture, in the footsteps of Dr. Adu. That's their name. That's what he named the Kashi Project, Brother Kwaku Adu. And we are committed to our people, Ghana and sustainability. We are committed in Ghana sustainability through natural resources. In order to make the Kashi Project a reality in the community and in our people, we are raising $250,000 through various fundraising efforts. Habesha is committed to doing our part to build the Kashi Project in Africa, but we can't do it alone. They need your help. So brothers and sisters, go to HabeshaIncorporated.org, HabeshaIncorporated.org, and give your assistance. The Ledge Group stands for Land for the Development, for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. They have a raffle. You have the possibility of winning a African safari in Tanzania, a Tanzanian African safari. So go to theledgegroup.com, theledgegroup.com. The brothers and sisters of the Ledge Group are dealing in the four areas of human development: food, water, clothing, and shelter.
They have 12 projects on the continent in 6 countries with over 170 people employed and over 260 members. You should become a member. That's theledgegroup.com. Bibi Atumi. BibiAtumi.com. Go to Bibi Atumi, A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I.com. BibiAtumi.com. Every Saturday, they have the Saturday seminar series. This Saturday, the topic tomorrow at 9 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern, is the forces arrayed against Africa, social and cultural warfare. And he has a few other titles coming up, too. Next Saturday, Saturday seminar series number 10, Why Kemet Matters. And then he has another seminar on the 17th, Common Elements of African Cosmology. Outstanding presentations at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 a.m. Pacific time. That is Obadale Kamban will be doing the presentation. I'm quite sure there'll be others on there. When I checked in the last time, it was outstanding. If I got a chance tomorrow, I'm going to do it. It's a $10 fee, but go to bibiatumi.com and check it out. Just check out all the things they have to offer on that website, bibiatumi.com. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, located in the West End here in Atlanta, right across the street from Soul Veg and up the street from Shrine of Black Madonna, which the Shrine of Black Madonna is open here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Fridays and Saturday. 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. And check out the Shrine of the Black Madonna. But Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar with delicious smoothies and fruit drinks and all kinds of good stuff and good drinks for your body. And Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar. Give the brothers and sisters a call at 404-444-1653. 404-444-1653. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia has a fine selection of books and so forth. Her new place is open right there in the main corridor of the Greenbrier Mall. And give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, my good friend Gazimde Ajamu, he has that coffee bar open and with delicious Cameroon boyo. Check him out. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. Give him a call at 404-519-8107. That's 404-519-8107. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Their Thursday night broadcast went off last night. And I didn't get a chance to hear it. Unfortunately, I was out. But every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, go to blogtalkradio.com/us lifting us. And the number to call to listen if you want to, but you can go online to listen. But if you want to call and listen, and then or either call to make a comment or question or whatever, you dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us every Thursday night from 9 p.m. to 10. Sun Goddess Scents. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, and that's booth number 225. For more information, please contact Sister Shelly Amonsette at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Akaban Institute and Baba Baruti and Mama Baruti have been doing an outstanding job, and they definitely deserve to be supported to develop our young warriors. Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. You can use Cash App and PayPal to make your contributions and keep them coming monthly. That is Cash App, $YAH, and then YAAM, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. Also, too, Baba Baruti is a prolific writer. And, of course, you can go to AkabinHouse.com. AkabinHouse.com. and check out Baba Baruti's myriad of outstanding publications. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. April 1st. True freedom is a total submersion in and willing subjugation to the truth. Anything short of single-minded obedience to the truth is slavery. Hence, freedom and system, order, arrangement, discipline, are inseparable. The question then becomes whether we are really interested in struggling toward freedom or whether we are just rebelling against the present system as pawns of those forces that intend to set us up for more insidious systems of enslavement. John E. Churchfield. In chess, one of the most important objectives is to severely limit the opponent's options. To win, you must circumscribe your opponent's thoughts in order to manipulate their movement to your advantage. We have lost sight of this in this anti-African reality, and we have become overtly confused by our confinement within artificial structures created by aspiring Caucasian extremists or white supremacists. Reactively, we look to our opponents' cryptic faces and body language for answers. We have lost sight of our power because of a few lost pieces and refuses to acknowledge the benefits of sacrifice and the constructing view and even ticking clock gives those clinging to an amateur status. As we, the underdogs in any game of chess, if we want to win in this world, we must again come to define and implement for self our ancestral given identity and vision. We must strategically base the movement of all of our pieces on a working knowledge of our story and others' historical entrapment of us. We must remember that in one move, the whole game can change. Only in this way will we gain control over our options. We have studied their games long enough to see how they do what they do. It's time to apply our sovereignty-seeking genius to the board. Affirm, I obey the truth. Affirm, I obey the truth. April 2nd. Salt water in his veins. Nothing can drown him. He walks on water while holding the world on his shoulders. Maneuvers through chaos while maintaining control and order. Miss Wright. Toxic masculinity is a conceptual myth manufactured by those who desperately fear the warrior within our men and boys. It is a battle cry for those who are in full pursuit of fulfilling Urugu's agenda to effeminize and remove them from any battlefield where men should stand and confront others' efforts to destroy us. Ultimately, it is an erroneous deception promoted by those among us who seek to misdirect the righteous rage of these warriors inward, away from our true enemies, so that the murder of our people's spirit, mind, and bodies can be done with a minimum of resistance and even with our assistance. Whew. The problem is not masculinity. The problem is the awareness of fears of those aspiring to Caucasian supremacy or Caucasian extremism, white supremacy. The problem is it's in the mental side of those among us who adore Urugu. Affirm, I honor and respect the power of our warrior men. Affirm, I honor and respect the power of our warrior men. April 3rd. We fear for the right we know. We fear for the air around us. We fear to fight for freedom. We fear to fight for liberty. We fear to fight for justice. We fear to fight for happiness. We always get reason to fear. Thila. The fearful really think that warriors are susceptible to their technology. And interestingly, they believe this because the weakened qualities inherent in their mental side of limitlessness cannot even begin to allow them to imagine a warrior's inner strength. The mental side, like liars and thieves, believe that anyone who looks like them at heart thinks like them. They cannot conceive of the manifestation of a true power beyond their contradictory, mal-developed, inhuman, despiritualized malevolent, treasonous definitions and images Urugu affords them. So, understandably, it is beyond them to comprehend a person whose mind, heart, and spirit adheres to divine law of their own volition. A person who genuinely loves his or her own people, even while fear and hatred by most of them. Uprightness confuses the mental cycle because the only reasonable interpretations of their imitation, feverishly worshiping Urugu's way. Vicious, only able to see self-worth through the exploitation and manipulation of others who look like them. Self-hating, dutifully serving Urugu's psychopathically racist chaos. Minds can give is one of gullibility and weakness. It is beyond their vision to see the strength that righteous warriorship and warriorhood embodies because a slave cannot imagine imagining freedom. A slave cannot imagine imagining freedom. Affirm, I do not fear to fight. Affirm, I do not fear to fight. Fear, false evidence appearing real. We suffer from deep fear. False evidence appearing real. Brothers and sisters, it's going to be a good day. After all, it is Good Friday. Yes, that's right. It's Good Friday, brothers and sisters. That's right. And I hope you join the conversation. I hope you give us a call at 215-490-9832. We're going to talk about what it is. We're going to talk about this weekend. You know, one of the things that why I've talked about this for many years, long before I came on the radio, you know, I've talked about this many years, had conversations with many people and so forth, is because Christianity purports itself to being historical. Christianity purports itself being real. That the people within Christianity, the deities, of course, the only one deity in Christianity, that is Jesus Christ. Or some who believe Jesus Christ and God are one and the same. Or the Trinity of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. It's all one and the same. And so this religion, this world religion, you know, it is historical. All the other religions of the world were myth. Were fairy tales, were allegory, were symbolic. Christianity, which came after all of those, is real, is historical, is physical, and it is believed by millions, hundreds of millions around the world. Great edifices were erected in honor of it. Some countries, all of their resources were put into a church, a mosque, a synagogue, a holy shrine, a holy temple, as opposed to finding ways where the human beings in those particular areas could all benefit from shared wealth, from a common ability to survive for and with one another, that nobody would suffer. I guess that's why, to me, when I look at ancient African civilizations, I have to marvel at them, because that's what they did. They weren't exploitive. They weren't putting people to work at the, you know, enslavement at the sting of the lash. There was civilization that grew through the efforts of the people themselves. And obviously, the pinnacle, the apex, the zenith of African high culture is Kemet, or what the Greeks called Egypt. It is through the development of Kemet over thousands of years that you get these deities that morphed in other things. In fact, around the Christmas time, I played for you the piece, the Zeitgeist piece, of the comparisons and how all of these deities are taken from Kemet. Of course, the names changes. But the personification of them are the same. And of course, you know, this is no different. You know, I remember once I said to a class, I said, you know, the ancient Kemetic people had developed a calendar. They charted days. They could say on this day, I'm not sure what they called each month, but they didn't have a 12-month, they had a 10-month calendar. You know, 365 days. The ancient Kemetic calendar was real, and it was exact. And all other calendars are taken from it. The Chinese, the Muslims, all of them. The Gregorian calendar, the Julian calendar. It is the Julian calendar and then the Gregorian calendar, which we operate under to this day. This is not the year 2021. This is the year 6,200 and what is it, 70 now? Something like that. Something like that. 6,200. As you can see. But they mark 2,000 with the supposed birth of Jesus the Christ as they count down the years to that point. So they don't go, you know, when you look at the calendar way back and you started at, you know, you started, you see the counting down to the birth of Christ, supposedly. And then, of course, he lived only 30-some years, with 32 years, 33 years, something like that. And then from that point, you know, after his crucifixion, and then from that point going forward, the numbers continued to go up to where it is today, 2021. But even at that, if they knew the date and the year, they could have said that was, they said it was Friday, but they had an opportunity to say this year and this date. You know, just like right now, as I'm talking to you on April 2nd, 2021, as I'm talking to you and you hear me and suddenly you don't hear me because you found out that Brother Oshi suffered a heart attack and he died right there on the radio. And maybe sometime down the road on April 2nd that something happened, you remind yourself that, damn, I remember when Brother Oshi was on the radio, man. You know, and next thing you know, the brother was off the radio. Or any other incident that you can remember, the dates, like you remember the date of 9/11, you remember the date of November 23rd of 63, you remember the date of April 4th, 1968. You remember these days and dates because of something that happened. The most important day in Christianity is the death of Jesus the Christ so he can be raised to save. That is the bottom line thing of Christianity. It's not even his birth, which is bogus, but it's the death and resurrection. Everything in Christianity hangs on the death and resurrection. So then why is that day not fixed? And of course, the reason is because of another date that could have been labeled, but is not, and that is Passover. Supposedly, you know, Abraham. Let's go back. And please, brothers and sisters, help me out with this conversation if you want to join in at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking about the historical. You know, this is Good Friday. Really? It's Good Friday? Really? We're talking about the historical parts of this theology of Christianity. What truly is historical about it? As opposed to other theologies believing that there is a myth to them, there's some allegory to them, there's some symbolism to them, there's some metaphors to them, you know, all kind of other iconography to them, but Christianity purports itself to be real. All the others are fake, but Christianity is real. It is historical. Christianity and Islam come out of Judaism, because Judaism is formulated by Abraham. Abraham in the Christian religion is a man who favored with God. Of course, all these things came after Noah, because after God had created the earth, you know, God created the earth and then and put Adam and Eve in on the earth. You know, there's some gospels in Genesis, which is the beginning. They say God created man and woman. And then about a few paragraphs later, they say God created man and then created woman. And then they talk about creating woman from the rib of a man, you know. But of course, we all know that's all this stuff is metaphoric, because we know history, we know biology, we know science more so today. And we know that in order for human life to come into existence, it comes through the female. It comes through a female, you know. And so even though in that part of the Bible it says that woman was created through man, we know that's not possible. But once again, it's all. See, the thing is this. What should be taken literally and what should be taken historically? And I'll continue to say this through what I'm doing today, is that reason why I say these things is because they have said to the world that Christianity is historical. All the other theologies are myths. All the other theologies are allegory. All the other theologies ain't about. Christianity is the number one thing, and it is real. It is true, you know. And so, you know, I guess we're trying to deconstruct this. And to me, it should be done by us, for us. Because the reason why I rail against it is because so many of our people believe it around the world. I mean, if you have a chance to go to Africa and you see billboards of European Caucasian Jesus, people in church, people doing crazy stuff on the continent, you have so-called ministers. In fact, of the top 10 richest ministers of Christianity, Creflo Dollar and T.D. Jakes ain't in the top 10, but three Nigerian ministers, two or three. I don't know. I mean, they're out there along with all those other poo shiesty individuals. You know? And so we got to talk about this, because from my perspective as a Pan-Africanist, as a cultural nationalist, as somebody who believes in sovereignty for African people, the main obstacle, the things that hurt us the most from coming together culturally and spiritually in any other kind of way is Christianity. Because it made us believe in something that is foreign to African. It is not African. Islam is not African. We got a caller. Good afternoon.
Hey.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Brother Oshie.
Hey, good morning. How you doing, Sean? How are you?
I want to talk about this, because I mean, this is something that's, again, that's crucial. Like what you're trying to say, like the trying to make sense out of the Bible, which is, you know, you can't make direct sense out of the Bible. Let's just talk about New Testament, Jesus, and all that, right?
Okay.
If you're talking about the books of the Bible, the titles of the books of the Bible, right? Talking about Romans, Corinthians, yada, yada, yada. That right there is the red flag, because, you know, where's the book of Mali? Where's the book of Great Zimbabwe? Where's the book of, you know what I'm saying,
uh-huh.
That's the whole point. You know, yeah. These the books are registered in a geographical area that is on the fringes of Africa proper. You do have Egypt, and then naturally, you know, there goes more of the twist where the Pharaoh's bad, the, you of know, course. Pharaoh mm-hmm. bad, Pharaoh bad. You know what I'm saying? That's yeah. already corruption and slander on black folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole idea of the Bible itself is just, it's propaganda is just given to the masses. And you can imagine, like, what that was in those times, because I don't think it was really like a book. But, I mean, you know, when I look at the Old Testament, you know, when we talk about Abraham, a lot of these names and words are reconstructions themselves of sure. other things. Like,
sure.
to me, like, I've heard an idea that, like, Abraham is nothing more than Brahmin, you know, readjusting. And where did the Brahmins come from?
That's
the
India.
Brahmins come from India.
India.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm gonna say this, because, like, I think about this a lot, too. Like, when we talk, when black people talk about how Europeans are white, I have to check myself about that, because white people don't come from Europe. White people come from Asia. When we talk about the caves and hills of Europe, right? Mm-hmm. You know, old brother Colin. What we should really be talking about are the caves and hills of Asia. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
You know, mm-hmm. you know the Hyksos people who came in the northern Akhmet. You know what I'm saying? A lot of those people come from Central Asia. They came from the Caucasus Mountains. And you know, when we talk about Caucasus and the Caucasians, like I'm starting to like realize that the Caucasus were one of the last places that white people came into. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like that's like the entry point of white people coming into basically Europe and Africa. Because I'm pretty confident that before white people were in Europe, it was pretty dominated by black people. And the black people basically bred out, hunted out, warred out, conquered until they, you know, there's genetic, you know, fringes in like Western Europe. You know, I'm thinking some of those Celts were black. You know what I'm saying? Because like, again, this is critical, because when we say Europeans and we equate Europeans with white, you know what I'm saying? Going back to the Bible and going back to geographical realities and stuff, like, you know, I'm starting to realize that, you know, when a lot of that whole book is just, you know, like you say, it's allegories and anagrams of things that just are superimposed over a time period, and that it's supposed to be a chronological anchor
sure.
of like, well, things. That the problem? Like, you know, that's the beginning.
Yeah, that's the problem, Sean, because you're supposed to, you know, the people who promote this seriously in Christian religion says that the Bible is the infallible word of God, which means, of course, there is no interpretation that is not just, not is not right. So there's no interpolation. It is the fact. Even though it's sometimes very hard to believe, it's very hard to comprehend some of the allegories, some of the myth, some of the superstitious things that happen coming from the Bible, you know, but you're supposed to believe that it is the word of God, and that all these things happen the way that it said it happened. Of course, it didn't. And I think any rational thinking person would understand that. But if you are a Christian, the main thing that you believe, regardless of all the other allegories, the main thing that you believe for your salvation is that Jesus died and rose. That's the main thing. You know, any other thing, they, you know, okay, fine. Okay, I'm not going to argue about, you know, this, that, and the other, but I'll fight to the death to say that Jesus died on a Friday and rose on a Sunday. Although, even though the scripture consistently says that just like Jonah in the whale of the in the belly of the whale for 3 days and three nights. Now that's 72 hours, three yeah. days and three nights. Now, just for the sake of this discussion, brother, that Jesus died at 8 o'clock in the morning. They got him up early and whooped his ass, beat the sugar honey iced tea out of him all along that road of the passion. You know, I went to see that movie.
With the cross, carrying his own cross.
Yeah, carrying his own cross, except that one brother. You know, always got some Negro. in the story who helped carry his cross a little bit, you know, and carried all the way to where it was put there on, you know, in Galilee and put into the ground, and then he was hoisted and so forth, you know, and carried his cross all the way. You know, that you believe that actually happened, that actually happened, and that he was taken down, and then he, you know, they went through the whole ritual. This is Friday. This is Friday.
Today is Friday.
Exactly. Yeah. And going through that whole ritual until finally, I don't know what time Friday, if they did put him in the tomb and sealed the tomb on Friday, you know?
Yep.
Okay. But let's just say, once again, as we're discussing this, this is all myth and allegory to begin with, that it was Friday, day and night Friday, day and night Saturday. But on Sunday morning, that don't give you no damn 3 days. That's just 2 days. See? So they said 3 days. That's just, yeah. You know, because there's people have what on Sundays, on Easter Sunday? Sunrise services. They say that he rose at sunrise. I mean, all of these things are metaphorical. It's just like he rose because that's what happens. The sun rises. You know? And that's what we're talking about. It's just like during the Saturday or Christmas time. You know? See, one of the things that my brother, who's I consider a theologian, he knows Christian Bible front and back. As a church and so forth. Although he, you know, we don't talk too much because he has a narrative of faith. He has a narrative of faith. I'm coming with a narrative of historical things that are based on facts. And facts trump faith every time. Faith is just what you believe. You know, as I was talking to another so-called Christian, well, I ain't gonna say so-called, he's a Christian, young brother's Christian. And I said to you, you know what the discussion here is? That you don't want to believe this? Because it's like this with Christians. They rather believe and it not be true than to not believe and it be true. Because their ass is going to fry in hell. You know? But that's the reality. Because the religion has trained you. The religion has trained you to believe that it is true, and that if you go outside of it, putting a fear factor in you, that you will burn in hell. So regardless of what I say, any damn body else says, you know, even what any preacher says, I mean, there have been many religious people who came to the reality of truth. There are preachers who talked about the word of God, and then suddenly, because I don't know what happened, some kind of epiphany or some kind of connection to historical reality and facts, they put that Bible piece kicked it to the curb because it did not fit, number one, with rational thinking, but number two, for us as a people, Christianity, of course, been, you know, taken over by Europeans, by Caucasians. And one of the main places that you can point to is the Nicene Conference of 325 AD, where Constantine, who realized that within the Roman kingdom, there are all these conflicts with Christianity, all these conflicts with the religion that was established, you know, 300 years prior. Almost 300 years prior. And so now we're trying to get some uniformity in this situation. So he calls all these people who were biblical, whoever, theologians and scholars, whatever, to come to Nicaea, to come to the Nicene Conference. And what's interesting about the Nicene Conference is where a lot of the concepts were established on an Easter piece, concepts on Christmas piece. All these things were established at the Nicene Conference. See? And so, and also too, Christ became Caucasian. Christ became Caucasian. You know, and all the other deities, and of course, since that time, Christianity is Caucasian. And it's been put on the world in that way. Although there are some other nations who professed, like Korea. Korea has a large, remember the moons, Yongsung Moon and the Moonies and that theology? That was Christian. Although they did have some deities that look, and they should. To me, if you got a theology, your theology should look like you. Your theology should express who you are. Although in some religions, such as Islam, there should never be any images of deity. It is all spirit. That's why they forbid anybody to make any images of Prophet Muhammad. It is against the law, that law, you know. And of course, when it was done or stated like that, you know, people have been under the threat of death. It's understandable because that's the confusion. I remember when Imam Warf D. Muhammad took over for Elijah Muhammad. And he petitioned to Christian religions, do not make any images of the deities and in your churches. Well, of course, you stated the thing, but what they were saying, particularly for us as African people, when our child, we go to church and our child sees all this iconography, all these Caucasian angels, Caucasian all this, how does that make him feel or her feel? That everybody around them is Caucasian. All the angels, all the disciples, all the, you know, how does it make you feel? You know, so that's the part that I have issue with, is the fact that this religion purports itself to be historical. That everybody, and it's been taken from all other religions. I mean, you know, just like I said that this Easter piece is part of what is Passover. What is Passover? Well, Passover says that the Hebrews, the Israelites, the Jews were in bondage in Egypt. That could be a true, no, that's not a true story, but that could be the story for that, because that ain't Egypt. It's not Kemet. Okay? All right? Because there were no people in bondage in Kemet. There were no people making temples and tombs. It might have been like that when the Greeks came in, the Ptolemies, I don't know. But it sure in hell wasn't like that during the dynastic periods, the 30 dynasties with some lasting from a year to hundreds of years. It wasn't like that. You're talking about a civilization that lasted over 3,000 years. No, there was no enslavement. You got some, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the whole Moses thing and that 400 years, that is just a Hyksos period in northern Kemet in the Delta region, that Varus.
Uh-huh.
You know about the Hyksos people.
The Hyksos were the first real invasion into Kemet from outside.
Yeah. I think that those people, those Hyksos, are like what I would consider like the proto Jews, basically. Well, that is that, you know, when they talk about being expelled from Egypt, no, what it is, it's kind of inverted. They invaded and was there for a little bit, and then they got kicked out by the brothers. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. They were there. They were trying to rule and so forth. There's all kind of internal strife going on until finally they got together and they kicked them out. One of the things that I've learned over the period of time that the Hyksos didn't bring anything. In fact, Kemetic culture was so strong during these invasions, they brought nothing into the culture. They didn't bring anything into the culture from the Hyksos. Okay, they did bring the horse and chariot. Okay, we'll give you that. But
wait. No. Because Africans had chariots. There's like cave paintings in like the in the desert with African people on like wheeled structures. No one tell you that African people didn't have chariots before anyone else.
Okay.
African people had chariots and wheels and all that.
Okay. I'll relent on that particular piece, but this is what I read a number of times from African center historians, that the only thing that the Hyksos brought into the culture, because the point being that the culture was so strong that they really didn't do anything. The culture benefited them. Just like the culture benefited Greece when they came in. The culture benefited Romans when they came in. The culture only changed when Islam came in. But Islam came in 600 years later. Islam goes across North Africa in the 7th century, in the 600s. You see? So that's when the culture changes. So the Kemetic culture was strong and viable. In fact, when the Greeks came in, the Ptolemies, they didn't want to go back to Greece. They wanted to be Kemetic. Cleopatra the VII, her whole thing was, even though the Ptolemies had been there hundreds of years already, but we're talking about what preceded them was thousands of years of Kemetic culture that they wanted to have for themselves and put their faith. And literally they did, because there are some temples built by built during the Ptolemaic occupation of Kemet. And that's when, of course, Kemet became Egypt, you know. And so, you know, she wanted to preserve the culture. So that's why she played Julius Caesar and played Mark Antony. But of course, Octavian came in and took over. And of course, Kemet was really the breadbasket of the Roman Empire. Like it was the breadbasket and knowledge base, the breadbasket and knowledge base of Greece. And of course, our dear brother, Dr. George G.M. James, in his book, Stolen Legacy, proves that. Proves that. But of course, now, since we're talking about the theology of Christianity and this formation and how that was imposed upon the world, you know, and of course, this being Easter time, today is what, Good Friday? And, you know, there's a Easter Monday, but I read this, this is funny. He said, well, you know, Judas, right? Judas told the authorities that, you know, you will know who Jesus is. I will give him a kiss on the cheek. You know, Judas was the traitor, right? So, and that happened on Wednesday, you know, that he was going to be, you know, let them know who he is. And of course, the Last Supper, in the upper room, in the upper room, you know. And so Judas was a snitch. So now you have, you know, Easter Monday, Easter Day, Ascension, preparing for the Ascension on Saturdays, Good Friday. I don't know what's happening on Thursday, but you have Snitch Wednesday. You have Snitch Wednesday. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I think that for us as African people, and I know the grip of what Europeans have done is so damn tight, as I always say, you know, they have a vice grip on our minds. And the only way that vice grip can be released is that little knob at the handle has to be turned. And the only way that knob can be turned is that, you know, you acquire knowledge of self, that you begin to infuse yourself with information about yourself and your history, your claims, your historical references, and so forth. And that knob, once you continue to do that, the knob continues to be turned to loosen, and to finally the tension is off, and bam, you open it up, and bam, there it is. You know, you can deal with it yourself. I'm going to take a break. When I come back from the break, there's a number of people in a call, so you just hang on. I'll get right to you. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us, and please join this conversation at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. As soon as you come back, we'll take these calls.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Shakedown, Chicago Steppin'. Now, that's a Friday song, ain't it? I like to play Friday songs on Friday. You know, something to get you in that kind of mood, you know. Stepping or bopping or hand dance. I don't know what you want to call it, but you call it what you want to call it. Just do it. Just have fun. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media from 6 to 8 on Monday, Acres of Diamonds, Public Affairs Programming with Brother Jahad Ahmed. And then from 8 to 9 on Mondays, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Cambon and Nataki Cambon. And then from 9 to 10 on Mondays, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of In Cobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Melanin Live with Chief Lance Jones and Sister Benisiwa Ayan from 7 to 9 on Thursdays. And then on Friday, at 8 p.m. on Friday, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Fridays at 8 p.m. On Saturdays, tomorrow, from 4 to 6 tomorrow, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then Sunday at 7 p.m. from 7 to 9, from 7 p.m., I don't say 9 because they might come off at 10 or even later. Who knows? Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking about today the theology that has been imposed upon this world, and particularly on African people, the one particularly that is professed to be historical and true, while all others are mythologies and allegories, is Christianity. And but there's others, you know, that have adversely affect African people too, because they're not African spiritual. So, but we have callers, and if you want to join in on this conversation, you hit, if you're in the queue, which I see many people are, you hit star twice, and you're in. 646-646, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, my brother Oshi.
Oh, let me, and, hold on, Jay, let me finish saying this, and then you'll like this. Next week Friday, our my guest will be Baba Mwalimu Baruti, and we're going to try our best to give him the total 2 hours, because it's sometimes hard to get that, brother, and I understand, because he is a very busy man with education. So we're just going to do the intro, and that's about it, and the rest of the time will be for you as our listeners to have questions for Baba Baruti and let him make his presentation. So go ahead, Jay.
Oh, brother, you gonna give up 45 minutes to six? Oh, unbelievable, man.
That ain't 45 minutes, man.
Oh, man, listen, man. Me and Ralph don't turn on your show till after 11:45, man.
Well, you should turn on 11:30 then.
Yeah, right. Extra 15 minutes. But nah, man, that's all good, man. Look forward to hearing the Baba drop knowledge and wisdom, which we need, man. It seems in a lot of ways that our people are not hearing the message anymore. They're caught up in so many other things with the virus and, you know, just living life and all of that. So it's going to be beautiful to hear Baba. In regards to this whole subject, I look at it this way. Whatever form of practicing religion that African people had before the cracker came into our circumference should be what we follow. I don't believe in following anything that my oppressor has given to me to justify his torment of me and my people. So that's why I've never gotten into anything in regard to Sky Daddyism or anything of that nature that wasn't put forward from an African perspective. So, I mean, these holidays to me are nothing more, if the truth be told, a money grab for the cracker. You know what I mean? it's not about real spirituality or anything. It's about a narrative of how they can get paid. Because think about it. Most of our people, I don't know if they do it today, like they did when I was growing up. That's about the one time out of the year you go get you a brand new suit. And mama go get her best hat, and her best dress, her best shoes. And everybody's going to get together and go sit up and listen to that pork chop chicken eating pimp preacher talk that bullshit. And then you got to come home and you got to have some ham and potato salad, collard greens and biscuits, and you just going to feel good.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, it's back to business as usual.
Exactly.
And your black ass won't be back in church till maybe the new year. That's how I was, you know, whatever. Yeah. Other than, you know, I would go there to the pork chop chicken and eating stinking filthy institution to see Big Ma. You know, because that's where Big Ma was 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday. You know what I mean? So, I mean, the thing is this. It's propaganda. It's manipulation. It's brainwashing. It's all of those things that don't have anything to really do with spiritual upliftment and spirituality, because it was based on evil by the cracker. So, I mean, I just could never get into it. Well, and I ain't going to get into it.
I hear you. Well, you know, the reality is this. Our people have bought into it seriously, even though...
Real serious.
Yeah, very seriously. Even though during our captivity, it was presented to us, because the European who had it and utilized it for his benefit, but it was presented to us, has a method to quell us, to make us more docile, to make us more believing, and giving... And within that story, the idea that you, because, you know, Caucasians don't want us. They don't want us here. They sure the hell damn it don't want us in heaven with them. So they didn't believe that we had souls. And if we did go to heaven, there was a separate heaven for us. And so for us.
And this,
go ahead.
And isn't it the most segregated place in America on a Sunday between
That's right.
the hours of 9 and 1?
That's right.
I mean, that idea should tell you anything if you have any type of ability to logically think out a situation. How could your effing God be better than mine? How could you do all of the evil that you do and then have the nerve to call yourself a Christian? How could you think about this? How could you bomb the most holiest place on earth, supposedly, and didn't think that you're going to go and see the Sky Daddy? Now, if the Sky Daddy accepts you, then basically the Sky Daddy telling you he ain't shit.
Yeah. Let's just keep it 100.
If you're going to accept a man who supposedly killed one of your disciples, one of your brothers and sisters, into the kingdom of Sky Daddyism, then you basically... ain't sugar honey iced tea.
Yeah.
You're not condoning it. You're not saying it. And then again, on top of this, I want to know, when is Sky Daddy coming back? Because a lot of mofos been waiting a long time for the Sky Daddy to come back and straighten it out. Why did Sky Daddy ain't never stopped the cracker from lynching us? Why did Sky Daddy ain't never stopped the cracker from mistreating us? Why the Sky Daddy ain't stopped that no good, filthy, stinking animal who rape his most loyal disciple and kill him? Why don't the Sky Daddy never intervene and do that? You know why? Because Sky Daddyism is bullshit.
Okay.
That's all it is.
Okay,
it's a mythology.
That's
but,
right.
But, hey, I'm going to make some biscuits and have me a little bit of jam. And just put me on hold.
All right, dear brother. All right, Jay. You can join this conversation at 215-490-9832. For those who are already on the queue, you can hit star twice and join this conversation. You know, the reason why is the fact that it is a money-making system. It is a money-making system. And, of course, for Europeans, it has always been about conquest and taking and, you know, and supplanting and undermining and, you know, it is the history. It is the history. You know, the spread of Christianity was not about salvation. The spread of Christianity was about conquest and materialism and gaining possessions. The Catholic Church, which of course is the foundation of Christianity, you can say what you want, but that is the foundation of Christianity. So all the other Christian denominations, and there's so many, you know, just like in Islam, there's other, there are differences within that theology, differences in Judaism, you know. Oh, there's another thing. Why is it that the letter J, you're talking about Jews, you're talking about Judas, you're talking about Judea, the letter J was not even created in terms of the American, or Samaritan, in terms of the English alphabet. That letter didn't come until the 17th century, 1600s. So how could there have been? Okay, you say, well, no, his name was not Jesus, but because of Christianity, because of Europeans, the letter J comes in and, okay, now he's Jesus. But they said it was Joshua, started with an A, Joshua was his name. And it was not, you know, it was Judaism. Now, it wasn't Judaism, no, because it was no letter J. So it was Hebrews, okay, Israelis, okay. You know, once again, to me, it's a lot of confusion, a lot of confusion. Getting back to that story of the timeline. So now here you have sin, because God put on the earth Adam and Eve. Whether he made them together, as it says in Genesis, in the first beginning of Genesis, and he named all, and animals were here first, then he put Adam and Eve in and so forth, you know. But in another one, he had said that man was here, and then he made woman out of man, and then animals came. Well, okay. Once again, a lot of confusion. He was instructed not to eat of the tree of life of knowledge of good and evil. But of course, the snake tempted Eve, not Adam, and say, you know, you're just saying that, but your eyes would truly be open. And of course, she told Adam, hey, man, you know, this is some BS. Why don't you go ahead and take a bite? He took a bite and they saw their nakedness and they flew and all this kind of stuff. And so now they're on the planet and of course, they have two sons, Cain and Abel. Cain kills Abel. He runs away, goes to the land of Nod, went to a deep Nod. And of course, he married. I don't know where these people came from. And of course, from them, all the people began to be on the earth and they multiplied. And of course, sin runs rampant on the earth. Sin is running rampant. And God said, man, this is crazy. Let me do something about this. I'm going to find me a righteous person. And we're going to start this madness over. So he finds Noah. Noah's a righteous man. And so he tells Noah, and say, hey, Noah, what? Who that? It's me, God. What's up? I want you to build a boat. I want you to build an ark. I want you to build an ark. What is an ark? A big-ass boat. Oh, wow. What's happened? Well, because sin has multiplied just exceedingly, and so I'm going to cause it to rain and drown all y'all asses out. What? Yeah. So build this big ass boat. And at the appointed time, I'm going to have animals come in, you know, male and female, two by two, da, 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 da. And so you take your three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and their three wives and your wife, and y'all get on the boat. And of course, all the fools were laughing at him because he was building a boat, you know, probably hundreds of miles, maybe thousands of miles away from where there was water. Who knows? This is a story. And so finally he builds the boat and now it starts to rain. You know, and Noah and his three sons get into the boat. And, man, it's, you know, 40 days and 40 nights. And once again, just like a lot of stuff in the Bible, 40 days and 40 nights. But to me, you got to take them, you know, if they say day and night, that, to me, I don't know, that's 24 hours. But, hey, who am I? So anyway, it rains, and now the they're on the water, you know, and so, and he sends a raven out, don't come back. So it's still chaotic out there, still madness out there. Then Noah sends a dove out, and the dove comes back with an olive branch and saying that there's land, waters have receded, and of course Noah sailed his boat unto the mountains of Ararat, and that's where they believe that the Noah's Ark is. And of course, they never found Noah's Ark because there was no Noah's Ark. But anyway, so now they are departed, and all the animals who instinctively are on the planet, because everything else on the planet was drowned, they go to where they're going to be, from an environmental standpoint, from an atmosphere standpoint, where they will thrive. So obviously you can't be having no damn giraffes, up in the Himalayas. Okay. So no, they ain't going that way. Some yaks, some other animals, they would go that way. So all the animals went to their appointed places. And of course, Noah looking like, the man that, hey, I did it. So once he got on land, he built a vineyard. And of course, vineyards give you grapes. And of course, grapes give you wine. And so he had some wine, and he drank a lot of wine, and he was drunk. And it was hot outside, I guess, because he was naked. So his son, Ham, sees his father's nakedness and tells his brothers. And his brother says, oh, man, that's deep, dude. That's sad. That's sacrilegious, man. You shouldn't have done that. So his two brothers, Sham and Japheth, they walk backwards and cover their father's nakedness. And so when Noah gets up from that drunken stupor and he says, hey, what happened? Father, you were naked, and me and Sham, we covered your nakedness. What about Ham? Well, he told us you was naked. Oh, yeah? Bring his ass in here. So I don't like to tell these stories like this, but, because they're stories. But anyway, so he comes in the room and he says, hey, I heard you saw my ass. Well, I'm mad, so I'm going to curse you to be black and to be servants unto your brothers. I'm going to curse your descendants, not you, your descendants, which is Canaan. But Baba Oshi, Brother Oshi, isn't Canaan Israel? Yeah, that's what Canaan is. That's the land of Canaan. So anyway, Ham, the descendants of Ham are Africans. Sham, the descendants of Sham are the Semitic people. You notice I said Semitic people. I didn't say Hebrews. I didn't say Israelites. I didn't say Hittites. Those Semitic peoples, period. I didn't give a designation. The descendants of Japheth are Europeans, or Indo-Europeans, later becoming more Caucasianized to be who they are, as we witness them today. So those are supposedly the three. Now, I don't know about the other human beings, because as you know, if you listen to this program, I've always said how human beings got here. Human beings migrated out of Africa, and what makes human beings different is their ability to adapt to environments that they find themselves in. Sometimes their hair is curly. Sometimes it's very close curled. Sometimes it's straight and stringy. Depends upon the environment that they find themselves in, you know? So now you have that going on, okay? So everybody's, and of course, from Ham, you get Nimrod. Now, because everybody was all one family, right? So they all spoke one language, which of course is great for communications. So even though we're three brothers, and we all, the three brothers, we start to change physiologically over a period of time because of their environments, but at least we still have the same language. We still should be able to communicate. We still should be able to know one another, right? Okay. That's logical to me. I'm dealing with some logic here, not historical reality. I'm just dealing with some logic. And it's illogical, isn't it? You're right, it is. And so what happens is Nimrod, he builds the tower. He's a mighty warrior, And then God sees what Nimrod's up to. And he really, God's looking at this situation like, damn, you know, I thought I got rid of that. The human beings had a new lease on life through Noah. I can still see they're crazy. So he gets pissed. And so when Nimrod goes to the top of the tower and he shoots his arrow, God strikes down with lightning. Everybody hits the flow. They wake up or they get up and they start, I don't understand nobody. The Tower of Babel. And they're babbling. They don't understand nobody. So people started going off in their own ways. I even told my brother, I said, man, that was messed up, dude. The greatest thing that we as humanity and human beings can do is to communicate with one another. And you're saying to me that God intentionally confounded their tongues. That makes that God a God of mischief, a God of deceit, a God of hatefulness. You know, I don't like that God. I want a God that gives me inspiration. I want a God that helps me know that my humanity is good and that who I am as a human being is good. God of mischief. So he confounds their tongue, and so now we're at each other's throat. We don't understand one another, and we're fighting against one another. Yeah. And so pretty soon God looks for another person who is good, and he finds Abraham. First he was Abram. You know, God does that. God changes people's names. Well, actually, really, you can go even a further story than that, of course, is Jacob and Esau. And that's how the Jews come into play, or the Hebrews come into play, or Israel comes into play, is through Jacob and Esau, you know. And that comes through Isaac. So that story of Isaac. And that story of Isaac and Jacob and Esau, you know, Isaac, who was a good man, they say, you know, and he was going blind. He had two sons. They were twins. They were twins. And of course, the eldest twin is the one that is most favored because he's the eldest son and so forth. And Isaac loved Esau because he was mighty. He was like a warrior, you know, a hunter, great hunter. And so as his sight has gone blind and his health is failing, and he instructs Esau to go hunt and bring me back some of that savory food and meat that he loves, you know. And so Isaac's wife overheard the conversation because she favored Jacob. And Jacob, you know, he cooked and hung around the camp and so forth. So she told him, say, hey, your daddy about to lay the birthright and blessing on Esau. I got an idea. Why don't you make it? Because you make it even better than Esau. And then we'll put some hair on you, so you know, because your brother, he's all hairy and everything like that, and so you give it to him then, and then we'll supplant him. That's what Jacob means, the supplanter. So anyway, so now Jacob comes into the room, you know, and says in his imitation voice of Esau, I got your savory meat and stuff that you like. And so he serves him up and says, you know, your voice is something, the voice of Jacob, but I'm feeling, here, let me touch you. Okay, I feel the, you know, your arms and so forth. I like Esau, so no, let me taste. Oh, that's good. Okay, yeah, this is that stuff that I like. Okay, I'm going to give you the blessing. And so when Esau finally made it, he bringing it in and says, here it is. Who is you? I'm Esau, man. I'm Esau, daddy. Here's the savory meat that you like. Wait a minute. I already ate and I gave the blessing. Oh, Jacob. And so his mama said, hey, you better get up out of here, dude, because Esau is going to be pissed and he is going to kill you for taking his birthright and blessing. In fact, as they were battling, further into the story, I'm not sure if it was the blessing or the birthright that Esau couldn't kill nothing and wouldn't nothing die. Jacob said, well, I'll give you some food and water if you give me your birthright or blessing, one or the other. But the bottom line is it was finally cemented, birthright and blessing, to Jacob. And Jacob had to break camp, literally. And so he told his mama told him to go to your uncle, her brother, go to his place, you know. And on his way there, of course, he lay down. He was tired and he had a dream. He was climbing a ladder, Jacob's ladder, and he had a battle with an archangel or whoever, devil, I don't know. And, of course, he was victorious, but he broke his leg or something like that, as the story goes. But God changed his name. No longer will your name be Jacob, but your name will be Israel, and you will be a father of many nations and so forth. Okay. And of course he goes to his uncle's place and there he does some manipulations as well. And he wanted to marry Rachel, but another woman was given to him because it was the oldest woman who was supposed to get married first and something like none of these customs. And so bottom line is when he finally left his uncle, he left with a whole bunch. I mean, he was serious wealth and he had 12 children. The 12 tribes of Israel. And of course, Joseph, he was sold into captivity, put in the bottom of a well. Oh, man, all kinds of these stories that repeat themselves from Old Testament to New Testament. They're allegories, you know? And so it brings you all the way up to the birth of Christ and, of course, the crucifixion of Christ, which is the main thing in Christianity. Not the birth, the crucifixion. Is the main thing in Christianity because the crucifixion of Christ signals the salvation to those who are Christian. Without the death and resurrection, there is no salvation. You will not be saved. You will not be blessed and highly favored without that. And of course, the world believes this. And many of the other theologies don't challenge it too much. And, of course, the Hebrews did not challenge it because their Savior comes from them. But it was not the Christ that they were looking for. They were looking for some badass dude to come along and just start smiting all of their enemies. They weren't looking for some cat who was talking about, you know, salvation and another life and life ever after, all that kind of. No, we want you to kick this cat's ass and reestablish our supremacy on this land, you know, just like what they did, you know, thousands of years later when Europeans in Eastern Europe, the Khazars accepted the theology of Judaism and took that theology to a whole nother level. And then later on was able to get Western societies, United States, Britain, and so forth, creating the Balfour Declaration to reestablish a homeland for European Jews. And not after World War II, considering what Adolf Hitler did to them and almost exterminating them. No, don't give them that. You can't give them Germany. Well, I don't know if you know this. They talked about some African land, although, you know, they talked about, I think it was Uganda, you know. Because, you know, they had taken and colonized Africa. They felt they'd have every right to give that land that we'd stolen and colonized to anybody who we want to. But of course, the European Jews realized the connection, of course, that is their connection to Israel, to Palestine. And so in 47, or is it 48? I don't know. One or the other. They established Israel. And they have been fighting ever since. And of course, because they have military supremacy and their military supremacy is because of the United States, the United States, you know, and Europe, that the European Jews can do whatever the hell they want to do in that part of the world. And they are the main reason that they're able to do what they do, because they have control. They have control over, they don't have control over Islam, although, you know, Abraham is the one that connects all three religions, because of course Abraham, remember he was supposed to have killed his son Isaac. He was supposed to have killed his son, sacrificed his son Isaac, the one who gave birth to the two twins who later became Judaism. That's that connection. And of course, what connects Islam? Well, Abraham had a wife named Sarah, and Sarah was like 90-something years old, you know. And so she even told dudes, hey, Abraham, go ahead and, you know, kick it with my handmaiden, Hagar. And he had a child, you know. And then God saw, you know, I don't know how infinitely wise God could be if he didn't know that this was going to happen. God saw the jealousy, I guess, in Sarah, and told Abraham, hey, get rid of Hagar and Ishmael. Go to the desert. They'll be fine. I'll make a provisions for them. And of course, Hagar and Ishmael went to the desert. And of course, they became part of what is Islam today. That is the descendants of Hagar, or the descendants of Ishmael, is those who profess to be in Islam. Or Arabs, if you want to even use that, I guess. Okay, I guess. And so she had a son. She had a son, Isaac. And I just told you about Jacob and Esau from coming from Isaac, you know. And he was supposed to sacrifice Isaac. That's where the sacrificing of a lamb came in. He was supposed to sacrifice Isaac. And he was going to do it because God had told him he was a faithful servant. And of course he didn't, and because God told him, just hold it right there. You have proven. So from Abraham, you get Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. He is the father of the Abrahamic religions, which are, two of them are proselytizing, Christianity and Islam. And they're hardcore. They go up in there and they just, man, you better convert. You better relent. That, I mean, that's what I'm saying about Islam. Islam was deep in Africa and hard. Converting. You cannot have any custom or traditions that was not approved by Islam. And if I'm wrong, if I'm wrong, what I'm saying, please give us a call. I mean, I'm always open for dialogue. 215-490-9832. Those are in the queue. Hit star twice, you know. So, but yeah. So these stories, brothers and sisters, you know, even as I'm saying that, the imagery that has been put into my mind, it's hard for me to put an African face on these images. Number one, because they're not. But number two is that for so many centuries, the images have been Caucasian. Movies, pictures, illustrations, dramatizations, all of them have been European looking. You know? It's just like I saw this piece. Oh, also too, Ancient Kemet. I mentioned this before. And there's a piece that's going out on the building of the pyramids and the buildings of monuments and tombs. And what is, and it's a pretty long, it's a 3-hour piece. It's a 3-hour piece. I'm suggesting that, you know, that you go to it and try your best, you know, to, you know, check it out, because this is a deep piece, man. It really is. You know, it's a very, it's, yeah. Brother, a good brother sent it to me. Brother Anwar, Andre, excuse me, Amor. Brother Andre sent it to me, and it is very deep, very good piece. And it talks about the pyramids were not, you know, as I had stated, and many other scholars have stated, that they would go down the Nile, you know, or excuse me, really up the Nile, because they would go south. The Nile flows from south to north, so you're going, you know, upriver and going to quarries and cutting the stone, and then you would drag the stone onto barges and sail them downriver all the way to the Giza Plateau. Now, when you talk about pyramid building started hundreds, maybe thousands of years prior to the Giza Plateau of the main three pyramids that you see and the little smaller ones that you see. Because there are more pyramids in the Sudan, more pyramids in Nubia, in the Sudan. In fact, I just mentioned to you that Renoko, week after next, is going to have a guest, a Nubian brother, talking about that. You know, there are more pyramids in the Sudan than there were in Kemet. But you see the two the three magnificent pyramids of Khufu, Khafre, and Menkaure. You know, you see those pyramids, you know. But, you know, this documentary, I'm telling you, I'm going to look at it again and dissect it real good and then talk about it on the program, because it definitely deserves to be talked about. Because number one, you know, the story that you'll see on the Moses story and the Ten Commandments and the Exodus and so forth did not happen. They had a debate on it, discussion on it. That's what I'm saying to me, brothers and sisters, this time of year, what has been stated is not true. It is not true. Historically, it is not true. You know, they debated on the Passover, debated upon Hebrews in captivity, building temples, building tombs, building pyramids. None of that happened. You know, and when I talked to some religious people, in fact, when I talked to my brother about it, he said, yeah, well, what happened was the Pharaoh was embarrassed. I said, because what I said to him, I said, man, they had writing. They had papyri, and they written in stone. They're written in stone, and it's everlasting. But, you know, papyrus can probably, you know, burn and burned up. And that's what they did, of course, in Alexandria at the museum, at the library in Alexandria. They burnt it down. So those things. But stone, it's etched in stone. That's forever, you know. And so, you know, there was no debating at the time. But they weren't there. No Hebrews were there in captivity. He said, well, the Pharaohs were embarrassed. So they didn't want to put that down. Because, you know, if he stubbed his toe and it was significant, it was written down. So the fact that it is not there, hasn't been there, raises serious questions to the validity of it. But yet we don't want to deal with it. And yet we like to believe the story. There was a history piece that this guy, I can't remember, that came on. He was dealing with some historical truth. He says, if it's not true, you know, you go with the narrative. If the narrative's not true, and you take that narrative as being the truth, basically what he's saying. Even though it's not, you stick with that. Especially if it gives good meaning to what you're talking about. If it puts a good face on it, if you don't want to deal with the ugliness of it, you go with the, you know, that's what happens here. You know, they don't want to deal with the ugliness of this truth, and they rather go ahead and believe. And that's the thing about this theology. You know, the truth is there, but you rather believe the lie. You rather continue to believe the lie. even though people will tell you all the time, the truth will set you free. But we're afraid to deal with it because we've been given a theology that is shrouded in fear. Shrouded in fear. You know, they even tell you about how Jesus the Christ supposedly is killed, is crucified, and he goes into hell for those 3 days. Remember, it's supposed to be 3 days. You know, they even say it, day and night. So he's in the earth. He was in the earth 3 days. It's like Jonah was in the belly of the whale, 3 days, day and night. But of course, it can't be that because based upon the story, and I tried to explain that earlier today in the program about, you know, let's just say today, which is supposed to be Good Friday today, he was crucified, that it was done early in the morning. Let's just say it's 8 in the morning. Let's just say they got him down off the cross. His side was being pierced. He's dead now. The crown of thorns on his head, the nails in his feet, the nails in his palms, all those things, you know, even cleaned up, washed up, and purified, wrapped up, and went into a cave. They pushed this stone over the front of the cave, so he, you know, sealing it, you know. And so supposedly he goes to hell and has a battle in hell, and of course he wins. And so you're talking about Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 a.m. That's one day. Saturday from 8 a.m. to 8 a.m. Wait a minute. He's risen. I thought you said he was in 3 days and three nights. 3 days, three nights is 74 hours. That ain't no 48 hours. He's talking about 40. So he's supposed to have risen on Sunday. That's why they have sunrise services. You know? What about this story? And all the other biblical stories. You know, I don't mind anybody having a theology. And whatever it is about that theology, as long as it does not infringe upon me and my people, as long as it does not try to subjugate and imprison me and my people, you can have all your beliefs that you want. But what has happened to us is they have imposed a theology on us to our detriment. One of the main impediments for African people realizing unity, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us is theologies that have been imposed upon us. These theologies hinder us from throwing off the mindset of servitude and ignorance to capitulating to an evilness that has been our detriment, that we hate each other to such degree that we believe there's nothing that we can do about it. And the only thing we can do about it is just believe in Jesus, believe in the sacrifice of Jesus, and we will be saved. So ever how it turns out on this earth for us, whether it's here in America, where we always have been and always will be a second or third class citizen, it is that way in the diaspora, where we are, where we're always at the low end of the economic ladder and the societal ladder. We're shamed, disgraced, despised. It's like that on a continent. It's like that on a continent where we, our land is taken, our resources are taken. This is how it is. This is how it is. These theologies of Islam, Christianity, Judaism, all of them, they're not African, and they have prevented us from being able to be strong, to be independent, self-determining, liberated, and sovereign to control our own land, to control our own resources, to control our own communities. And anytime we were able to do something anywhere close to that, we've been vamped on. By outside sources. Brothers and sisters, I know it's time to close, get into that time. But I'm saying to you, as a listener, join organizations that will help liberate. Join the Pan-African Federalist Movement. Join the Pan-African Federalist Movement. To me, there's nothing more important. In fact, next month is May. Next month is May. And May 25th is African Liberation Day. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm going to try my damnedest to make African Liberation Day the most important celebration that we should have. Not just locally, not just statewide, no, globally. African Liberation Day should be a focus for African people globally. Because we are African people. That's what we must do. African Liberation Day. Globally. You know, I know a lot of other things happen in May. You know, Malcolm's birthday. I know we always have a thing. They've been having it here in Atlanta. You know, his birthday being a celebration. I'm hoping that maybe we can do that. I know last year we couldn't do anything because of the beginnings of the pandemic. And I know that it's starting to subside, you know, especially for, you know, most of the people, I believe, who are celebrating like I am may not have taken the vaccine. Some probably have. Some may not. I don't know. But the bottom line is we have to begin to get healthy. Think about those things that will make us healthy and keep us safe. Always wearing a mask, always keeping our distance. Do what we need to do to be safe. You know, tomorrow, hope you have a great day with your family. You know, just have a good day with your family. You know, I don't talk about a lot of these things because they they don't want to hear it. You know, just like that piece in A Few Good Men. You know, we can't handle the truth. No, neither can they. Europeans can't handle the truth. And the truth is out there. You know, if you want to find out more about what I'm saying, you know, you can go to YouTube. And there's a lot of good information on YouTube. Some to be believed, some not. You know? But there is information out there. Seek it. Seek it. You know? The main thing. Okay. I got a good text here. Local Atlanta, and that's hosting a town hall meeting April 10th. That's next week, Saturday at 6 o'clock. Okay. That's right. The theme, Sisters in the Pan-African Movement today. Invite speakers. Okay. I don't get that part, but thank you, Mama Nabantu. That is next Saturday at 6 p.m. Next Saturday. At 6 p.m., I'll be announcing this in the next few days, next few shows, programs, rather. Theme is Sisters in the Pan-African Movement. So join the Pan-African. Next week, Saturday, brothers and sisters, I'll give you the details in the Pan. It'll be a Zoom call, and so I'll give you that information. So, as I said, join the Pan-African Federalist Movement. Join a movement for liberation for African people. Do what is necessary. Let's believe in ourselves. And if your religion helps you believe in what you believe, and it's about believing in us, right on, so believe it. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor are the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, that they can't do without, and they sure the hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day and a wonderful weekend. Shemhotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodiye means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a wonderful day and wonderful weekend. Hope to see you back here on Monday. Peace, family.